Hi guys, welcome back to Tea at Number 5. We are the Lit Wallflowers. I'm Winnie Wu.
And I'm Tony Rose.
Ooh, it's been crazy. Thank you guys for all the love that we've been getting. Thank you guys for tuning in. Like we said last week, there are a ton of Bridgerton podcasts out there right now. We really appreciate you choosing us, hanging in there with us, staying on for the entire 2.5 hours with us.
Sorry, yeah. We tried to be shorter by 2 minutes, but it didn't help.
Yeah, and we were like, next week's going to be easier because, you know, we don't have to talk about as much stuff. Nope, equal amount of pages of notes.
Yeah. I'll be honest, I did a little less research, but still, I'm only like one page down.
Oh my God. So, welcome. Strap in for another 2-hour ride. Like I said, if you need to break this up, we don't blame you. If you don't finish, we don't blame you. It's more information than you would ever need about a 50-minute show, but...
Bear with.
So we have a little bit of hive cleaning to do. First, we did miss a very small but important detail in one Easter egg. Did you want to share it?
So when Marina and Colin were talking in the drawing room in Featherington House,
yeah.
The housekeeper and Lady Featherington, they were talking and the housekeeper said, we could always send the Willow back to the country. And Willow, it does connect with book 5. Just a little thing, but it makes a difference, I think.
Yeah. And some of you messaged and was like, what the fuck is a step back? So, sorry. We are stuck in our Bookstagram world. Step back is an activity that was founded by Pink Callan Reads. And she's the sweetest person ever. But every Saturday, we do an activity called Step Back Saturday. Step Back is a second cover to the cover, I guess you could say. It's either usually on the next, when you open the cover, it's there, or it's on the back of the book. When we said that the ivy and the rose tied to the step back, the very first edition has a pink cover, and in the back of it is an illustration by Ginsberg. He is very, very, very well known for a lot of his step backs that he's done for multiple romance authors, mostly for Lisa Kleypas. If you guys are interested in his art, he does sell replicas of them. You just need to email him, and his Instagram is Ginsberg Illustration. It's gorgeous, and we know Biologist Reads Romance collects them.
God, they're so expensive. Jealous. I know. I'm even thinking about selling one of my hardcovers just to get something from Max Ginsberg.
I know.
So we'll see. But I looked at his page, and I'm like, I wouldn't even be able to choose.
Yeah.
So
I mean, all of your favorite Lisa Kleypas books, Brighter Than the Sun by Julia Quinn, Duke and I by Julia Quinn. I think a couple other ones of the Bridgerton series might be his as well, too. So that's what the step back is. It's an illustration that's inside the cover on the back of the cover. And it is an activity that we do every Saturday. We post the step back only illustration. And then the entire Bookstagram universe kind of tries to guess and play games and kind of comment on how saucy said step back is.
Sometimes we even go into like fan fiction and put our own dialogue. It gets amazingly fun.
It's super fun, but we apologize. We're so used to talking Bookstagram language that we didn't clarify what a step back is. So thank you for asking so that we can remember to clarify. And then a bunch of people also reached out and asked, do we need to read book 1 to get into book 2? My thing with books is it's always a yes to start from the beginning. Always, always. But it is not necessary for you to read book 1 before you jump into book 2. So if you are satisfied with everything that you learned from this show and you like it how it is and you would are very anxious to reach Anthony's story, then go ahead and read book 2. I've had multiple friends who have done that, who have completely skipped the Duke and I because they want it, what they saw on TV, to stay intact in their head and visualize the characters as they see on Netflix jumping into book 2. And they enjoyed book two without having to go into book one. So that is a long answer. But if you have OCD, like me, no matter where I start in the series and I find out there's a book one, I always have to go back.
Yeah, I think if you watched it and then you just go into book two, because of how they did the show and how the actor portrayed him, I don't think you need to read book one.
You should.
But you should. Need to. I will always say also,
and
read the book.
And as we mentioned already, there's going to be changes to some of the characters. So it's almost better to go back so that you can see them in the light that they're in. We'll get into it in a little bit about, especially about Burbrook, because he does come back in book two. So just kind of getting the context of where his character is in book one from the book might help. And then also know that Penelope is not mentioned a lot during book one, as well as the younger siblings. So we got a lot more of Eloise.
Benedict.
A lot less Colin, I guess. And so things are just different. So if you're okay without the context of going into book two of how they were in book one, and you're okay with that, then definitely jumping into book two is okay.
I will say, like, to me, there is a different tone from the books and the show.
Yes.
This is why I like reading her books, because there's the dialogue.
Right.
So that's why I would always say read the books.
Yes.
Instead of just going straight into a different one. I like Anthony, both show and the books.
Same.
But if you want more of Anthony's dialogue, read the books too.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I just imagine that this is how boorish he was in the first season. You know? Because we don't get him. We just know that he's still overprotective.
Yes.
Third True. Season.
Yes.
So imagine what it was like first season, you know? So that's kind of how I take it. Moving on to some Buzzy updates. We are currently still number one in the US, UK, Yay! And Canada as the top watched show on Netflix. And we are trending to be the number one show produced by Netflix, like, ever.
Yay, that's amazing.
I literally can't.
See, this billion-dollar industry, genre industry, is taking over Netflix.
Yeah, and everybody's been asking, when are we going to hear about season two? I'm sure they've already signed season two. For anybody that is kind of newer, they've been posting a lot, which means that they're not ready to announce anything. Their MO has been to be radio silence. You don't hear anything from any of them for roughly a week or two. And then boom, something. Then there's like a teaser like, hey, something's coming. And then it's like, it's coming. So just letting you know, that's how this whole entire thing has been working. And that's just staying very on brand to Whistledown, right? Whistledown came out of nowhere and took everyone on a merry little ride, right?
Yes.
So right now they're posting content every single day. Nothing's coming. We're not going to get any news. just know that. And then once the content stops coming, even from all the actresses and actors, be ready.
Yeah.
Speaking of first editions, speaking of hardcovers, have you seen that it is now at $1,000 on Amazon and eBay?
What?
Those are unautographed copies. They're just hardcovers.
That is nuts.
It's crazy because we had a hard time finding this in general before the show came out. It's even more crazy now.
Yeah.
And speaking of the books, Julia Quinn now has two books in the top five. The Duke and I is number one. The Viscount Who Loved Me is number five. And right behind that, number seven, is Romancing Mr. Bridgerton.
Yeah!
So for 2 weeks in a row, Julia Quinn has three books on the top 15 New York Times bestselling list.
What about Benedict's story? Nope. A lot of people like Cinderella, right? We need to hype that up.
I think a lot of people don't like retellings. One, two. I think we have to take into account, people don't read like we read. They don't abandon all life and food and sleep to finish a book. Sometimes it takes a week or two. So I think everyone's, like I said, everyone's reading book two. And, like, right? Because Viscount Who Loved Me moved from number 7 up to number 5. So people are still getting into it. They're taking their time. They're digesting it. They're reliving The Duke and I, which is totally fine. And then, so if you think about it, people are going from 1 to 2, and they still need time to get to 3. Everyone is very anxious with Romancing Mr. Bridgerton because of Penelope and Colin. Because
the pollen effect.
Pollen has been extremely hyped up, right? And really, really crazy. Speaking of these books, Tony and I literally keep the romance section at our local Barnes & Noble in business. We come in there, we leave with stacks, we order more, they see us, they know, and like we've even have left before and they're like, is there any romance books left?
Yeah,
like,
no. I should feel embarrassed, but I'm not actually. That's pretty funny.
It's hilarious. And when December 1st hit, the Duke and I tie-in cover came out and there was a huge stack. We posted it on our Instagram in the shelves. And then when the show came out, it was like, if you like Bridgerton, read Duke and I. So it was on an end cap. I went because some of my girlfriends were like, I can't find the books. And I was like, no one reads romance here in Hawaii. No one at all. There's literally no romance sections in any of the indie bookstores out here, right? I went, the end cap is empty. Like, literally nothing is on there. And where Q is,
yeah,
not even a single Julia Quinn book. Not even one.
Yay.
And you know, when we go, there's always Julia
Something,
Quinn books.
Yeah.
Because we're the one who keeps buying it. So they're like, we gotta keep this in stock for these girls. None. Not a single. Not even the anthologies are there.
Oh, wow.
And Lady Most Likely is always there. Yeah. Because I buy them. And then they show up again. So, but even Lady Most Likely and Most Willing are not there.
Wow, they just want more of her.
Yeah, and I got a notification that Bridgerton was trending in my area. Guys, I live in the buttfuck of nowhere of Hawaii. I was like, wait, who is it? My apartment building? Like, who's watching this? Like, it's just so exciting that this is happening.
I love it. I love it so, so much. That means it's more people to talk to.
Yeah. So we are going to dive into episode 2, season 1, Shock and Delight. The summary says, Simon's apparent courtship of Daphne angers her brother Anthony and threatens to ruin the arrangements he made. Marina opens up to a curious Penelope. The director is Tom Verica. He plays Sam Keating on How to Get Away with Murder. He also has directing credits in Umbrella Academy, Scandal, Grey's Anatomy, and The Mentalist. The Mentalist is the only one I've watched out of all of them. Written by Jane Lynn. She has an extremely long resume, as well as Tom. But the one that I know, that I recognize from her whole list is Bones. She wrote episodes for Bones. So it just makes sense, the tone, yeah?
Yes, that does make sense. Oh, I love that.
Yes.
That was a good show.
It was such a good show. I was so obsessed. Everyone kept calling me Temperance, the doctor, because of my I don't give a shit attitude sometimes.
What?
I don't know. There was this very specific episode where, like, Girl Scouts found, like, a bones and bodies or whatever, and the way that she just was just very, like, blunt with them and, like,
let's get a move on, let's get this, like, done,
yeah, what are you doing, ruin the, whatever. And then my best friend, she was just like, this is you, this is literally you. I was like, I will take it because she is so intelligent, I'm okay with that. But it opens up with a maid walking down a very dark hall. You can see that the tone is a little bit darker. It's a huge contrast to how beautiful the show was in the last episode. She's holding what looks like towels or blankets, and she's very stressed, and you hear a woman screaming in the distance. So book readers, automatically we knew we were getting the prologue.
Yes.
We were like, oh shit. So how do you feel that the prologue came in on episode 2?
Because of how the episode went, I don't mind it at all.
The writing is genius because all of the flashbacks kind of correlate to something that's happening in present day in the storyline. So it just shows you, even though a lot of these things had happened however many years ago, that it's still in the forefront of his head. And I love how they did that, because we really learn the internal struggle that Simon has by the end of this episode.
There was so much about that prologue that he needed his own episode. So I kind of like how the first episode was, you want to know about Daphne, yeah, and what she's going to go through.
Right.
And then, because that's what the book is about. And yeah, then the hero is Simon, but he needs to have his own episode too. And we need to understand where the hell he's coming from.
Yeah.
And what he has to overcome.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't mind that
it was so good.
Episode two.
It was so good. I just literally, oh my gosh. So I really like that they spread it all out and correlated it back to current day story instead of hitting it all at once. I think that opening with it for the second episode kind of set the tone of the episode. And then, you know, it wasn't like dark and then happy, you know. Yeah. It was like, oh, okay, we're getting backstory. Yes. And who doesn't love backstory?
Yes.
So that maid brings in towels and blankets, walks into the room with a doctor and two midwives, and then it switches to a bunch of gentlemen smoking, drinking, and someone's like, you need to breathe, bro. What we are obviously assuming is His Grace is shouting, someone must tell me something. And someone passes him some whiskey, and he just, like, takes a swig. And if you did not read the books, you might have thought he's concerned about the lady screaming.
Yeah.
Might. But this is darker, so you already know that that's not what he's concerned about. And Lady Doenberry storms in, and she shoves someone out of the way. She's like, would you move, guy? His Grace says, what the hell are you doing here? You know, like, and we continue to hear whomever scream in the background. And Lady Danbury is saying, I'm going in, Your Grace. No place. And he's like, there's no place for a lady in there. And you know that this is back because the style of clothing that Lady Danbury is wearing is different. Yes. From what we've seen her in.
Hairstyle different.
But she's still got that sass. And yeah, she was like, someone must be with her, if not her husband, then. And then you hear a very loud scream. And that's when you kind of get an idea that, oh, he don't care about her.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about his wife, essentially, is what we're assuming. And the Duke runs in, and Lady Danbury tries to follow, and some
ass
loser face stops her, and she gives him this stare. I was like, oh my god, like, I was withering. Yeah. I was like, oh my god, how,
what do I do?
I know,
let him pass,
you know. And as we discussed last week, dukes are the highest rank, right under a prince and princess, so there's not much you can really do. And then he walks in, sees that she's struggling, blood literally everywhere, and couldn't give two shits. And all he could say is, I must know if I'm at long last to have a son.
Yeah. Tell me.
Yeah. Over and over again. And to the point where this woman, which is his wife, is in excruciating pain. We've heard her now for like 3 minutes screaming. And he doesn't even care about that. And on top of it, she feels that he needs to know as well, too. And she shouts, tell him.
I know.
Like, I can't.
He only cares about an heir.
And that, you know,
not what? Her welfare.
No.
Nothing. Is it going to be a boy?
How many scenes have we read that are the husbands are stressed out as the Duke was, right? But it's because their wife is in so much pain and they're so worried about their wife. And that's why they're like, okay, the father guy, you are more stressed than this person that is actually having a baby come out. You need to go into the study and have some drinks and calm down, you know? And that definitely was not what the situation was here. And he keeps asking, what is it? What is it? You know? And then finally, very somberly too, yeah? They were all like, it is a boy, Your Grace. The midwife looks extremely worried. And, oh God, it broke my heart. she didn't even let hold her own baby.
Not even touch, not even like a fingerprint on the baby.
Nothing.
I know, that was sad. In the book, did she touch him? No.
Mm-mm. So they gave the baby straight to him, and then he wanted to go promenade outside and be excited about.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, they shout it from the rooftops that he finally has a son, right? And that's what he says. He says, "I have a son. I have a son." And the Duchess is proud. You know, she has a second where she finally fulfilled her duty, and we kind of learned this from Daphne in the last episode, right? And she literally was telling Anthony, bro, I have one job to and one chance to get this right. Yeah. And you're messing it up. And this is how this woman has felt too. She has gone through strenuous labor. There's still blood everywhere. She didn't even get to hold her baby. And she's still smiling because she did her duty. Yeah. Like that, oh my God, I just can't. Yeah. Julia Quinn today posted that graph where it was like all the way in the top was like us imagining living in that time. It was like straight across, right? Oh, yeah. And then it's like all the way on the bottom, us actually wanting to really living in that era. And you know, we always say that too, you know, like as women we have no rights, and then Tony promptly reminds us that there's lack of plumbing.
Yeah.
And you see it too. This doctor is just letting her, you know, just, I mean, obviously he's not letting her, but just the knowledge that they had about bodies at that time is nowhere near what we have today. And
so she's hemorrhaging.
And Lady Danbury pushes past to finally get into the room, you know, and no one at all cares about what's happening to the Duchess. Lady Danbury calls her by her first name, Sarah, and she just looks so concerned. And the first thing out of her mouth, once again, I finally gave him a son.
Not even, God. There's something wrong, right?
I don't feel good. Like, I didn't get to touch my baby. Like, you know, it was like, I gave him a son. I just can't. And in the books, she conceived 5 times in the 15 years that they were married. She went to full term twice, but they were both stillborns. And on the 5th pregnancy, it ended in an extremely bloody miscarriage 5 months in. And the physicians told her that she must not ever attempt to have another child because her life was in danger. But 6 months after, they started to try again. And 5 months after that, she was pregnant, and they confined her to a bed immediately and paid a doctor to live in halfway through the pregnancy. A month earlier, she had experienced pains, so they put pillows under her hips so that she was at a 22-degree angle because gravity will keep the baby inside. That's how much they knew about babies.
And then when the doctor left, he added more pillows, right?
Yeah. And she was like at a permanent 22-degree angle for a month. Gosh. For a month. We don't know who this is at this point, right? Like if you didn't read the books, you don't know yet who it is. But you just know that it's Lady Danbury's very close friend. And they start laughing because, you know, she's finally fulfilled her duty. And unfortunately, during those times, that's what you're raised. You're raised to marry well. And sire heirs. Like, that's your duty as a woman. That's it.
Marriage of convenience.
Yeah. Yeah. Convenient for who? And then her laughter turns into a struggle of breathing. And the doctor says there's too much blood. And she slowly just kind of slips out of consciousness. And then you can hear cheering and glasses clinking and laughter, like just the
celebration outdoor.
Yeah, the outside. Contrast of what was like happening. And then the Duke says that he has a perfect son, Simon Arthur Henry Fitzranulf Bassett, and those are the names that were in the book. And they are all applauding, laughing, congratulating. And no one cared about the Duchess. And Lady Danbury just turns back around and just looks at the corridor of men celebrating. Like, are you freaking kidding me right now? You know? And I think the way that they did that, that she had a friend there, is so much more heartbreaking than the book. Because the book said the Duchess slowly slipped away and no one noticed. Mm-hmm. Equally as sad.
Yeah.
Yes. But, like, we've connected with Lady Danbury at this point, right?
Yes.
And we just watch her best friend die with no one caring.
Yeah. And it added to the story in the show, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
They made it work so well.
It was just crazy. And then it goes back into present day. Simon is looking at a bed that's all covered up. And he's just completely zoned out to where, until a maid says, "Your Grace, would you like us to arrange the Duchess's room for you?" And that's when you realize that that is the exact room that his mom died.
Yes. Where he was born.
Where he never even had a human connection with his mom after birth.
How heartbreaking is that?
Oh, and I'm sure Lady Danbury had told him that that's what had happened.
Eventually, sure, right?
Yeah.
Eventually. So.
Because she was there and she saw it, and she was the only one that cared that the Duchess was dying. And that is a little bit different from the story. Lady Danbury was very kind to Simon, but when he was older, not when he was a kid. So that's a little bit different, which we'll get into a little bit later. But right away, it basically shows you Lady Danbury's connection to Simon's family. He turns back and... there's just the pain, the torment, the sadness on his face. I just, like, your heart breaks. And then it's just like, he says, "No, that will not be necessary." And that was just another hint of, like, "I'm not ever going to get married. You don't need to clean up this room because no one's going to be taking no one's going to be here.
You know? At all, yeah.
No one's taking residence here." Whew. And then he switched to, like, the happiest song. And the tree, and it just says Bridgerton. So we then open the episode-ish. Sorry, that was the intro, and now we're in the episode. And someone taking a bath. None other than Queen Charlotte in her big-ass copper tub.
I want that tub. You know how I like copper pots?
Okay.
I want a copper tub. So random.
I love it. I love it. And, you know, back then, so this is why Tony stresses plumbing so much.
Yeah.
So back then, basically, the water would have to come from the well, go into the kitchen, get heated, and then the buckets would be brought to whatever floor or room this copper tub is, and footman after footman after footman would come to fill the tub.
Yeah.
And it can't be, like, big, giant buckets because... you know, like, can I carry up the stairs, yeah? So we see the queen. She keeps looking at the door. And then finally, a lady-in-waiting comes in and says, "It has arrived, Your Majesty." And she comes out of the tub, full nudity, dripping wet.
Her birthday suit.
And she's like, give me. You know, she's like, at once. And, like, all the rest of the ladies' maids are like, trying to look up, down, sideways, like trying to like not look at the full frontal nudity that they are seeing.
That is the queen.
That is the queen. So we switch over to the Bridgerton drawing room. Daphne is getting ready. And then we switch to Simon, who is leaving a very colorful bed. I was like, hey, that is very pretty. And in the trailer, we thought it was Sienna, but no, it's just...
it's a harlot.
Another harlot. another girl. Another lucky girl. Jeez. And she's like, "Where are you going so early, Your Grace?" And he looks so disgruntled, and he was like, "To promenade."
I love that.
So unhappy about it. And then you see Simon and Daphne kind of talking in the distance and smiling at each other and laughing. And Lady Danbury is like, "He's smiling." And Violet just giggles. She's like, "Hee hee." You know, like,
the Duke really smiles.
She was just so excited. Yeah. She's like, "Daphne has an excellent sense of humor. She's such a mom."
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. And then when Lady Danbury says she will need it, the foreshadowing of that.
Oh, yes. There was a lot of foreshadowing this in this episode.
Yes, yeah, for sure. It's kind of crazy. And, you know, obviously you had to watch it 17 times like we did to see that it's a foreshadowing situation. But true. Yeah, she's like, she has an excellent sense of humor. And Lady Danbury looks at her like she will need it. And obviously she's talking about something else, but, you know. And then Violet says, I have prepared her quite well, Lady Danbury. Words that we all know will come back to bite her in episode 7. They start negotiating balls.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's how they say it.
Negotiating. And Daphne wants him to attend 6 balls, and you must send flowers today.
He looks expensive
at her,
ones.
Yeah. He looks at her like, you gotta be kidding. And then she's like, expensive ones. And he's like, ugh, like, why? And then Daphne says, if you were truly courting me, you'd buy every florist in town. He stops dead, looks at her, and is like, if I were truly courting you, I would not need flowers, only 5 minutes alone with you in a drawing room. And it's very interesting because, I mean, come on. Who doesn't want that threat to come true? Let's go. Where's the nearest drawing room?
Every day.
Every day. But if you read the books, he did have 5 minutes alone with her because Violet just let her be with him in their drawing room. And at the end of that, she said that she would be a fool if she did not fall in love with him. So I love that they did kind of like an ode to the books with that as well, too. Do you want to tell them about the flowers, how what that means to Julia Quinn?
That actually pretty much happened in her real life. It was Valentine's Day, and she was going to her grandmother's house. Her mom was going there too. And her boyfriend, who's her husband now, he had flowers sent to all 3 of them. Yeah. That's why she wrote it into this book, because she thought that that was so sweet. Pretty old school too, right?
Very.
And to especially the fact that her grandpa had passed, and so it was a nice gesture for the grandma, especially because the grandpa was the one who always gave the grandma flowers. And it wasn't gonna make it into the show, folks.
Yeah.
And Julia Quinn said something to Chris Van Dusen, and they made it kind of work.
Yeah, they added lines in there to pay homage to that.
Yeah,
it was so cute when she said that. She said that they asked her if there was something that was cut that she really like
wanted,
and she's like, oh yeah. And so she kind of talked about that. And Chris Van Dusen, genius. And she kind of looks at him like, like, she, like, literally looks at him, like, short circuit. Like, what? You know, like, and then he was like, shit. He's like, ops, you know. And then she takes advantage of his discombobulation. And she was like, 6 balls, your grace. And then he's like, fine, but we'll see about the flowers. And she's like, they can't tell anyone. No one can know what had happened. And that's a little bit changed than the book. The book, they do inform Anthony the day after Lady Danbury's ball when he sees Simon in his drawing room.
Before the pee scene,
So the timing of that has changed a little bit. And I love that Simon... She also is referring to the whole Burbrook situation, and Simon's like, you must know you did nothing wrong. And then she's like, the rumor alone will ruin her, you know? And just having the rumor of, like, being alone with a man, let alone punching him. And Simon cannot, if you look at his face, he cannot control how amused he still is. She decked this guy. So, he's just laughing, and, and then he was like, we wouldn't want to start a scandal. And she's like, you're used to it. Don't play. Get out of here. And they just have this like shit-eating grin exiting the screen.
Yeah, you can see that their friendship is growing.
And they're getting along. And that's the thing with Daphne, right? That she can get along with everyone. And she's so friendly. And it shows, like, she's not afraid of him. Their first meet, she was just like, she insulted him, you know, and that's why he was like, oh, hey, hey, girl.
In the book, when they first met, he was trying to be Reiki with her, and she pretty much was like, Are you kidding me?
She burst out laughing. Yeah. She's like, oh, cute.
That's what you were trying to do, right?
He was like, what the hell?
Didn't work.
So, we'll be back at Featherington House, and Philippa, Prudence, and Penelope are kind of like, that's disturbing. Like, they're just, like, whispering back and forth to each other. And Lady Featherington is like, what are you talking about over there? And then Prudence is like, Penelope got a question. And Penelope's like, no, I don't. And then she's like, Penelope wants to ask you something. She's like, no, I don't, Mama, no,
That's so funny.
So I guess, like, there was a deleted scene that Philippa and Prudence were listening on the door when Lady Featherington approached Marina the night before.
Mm-hmm.
So that was that. But I think they deleted it because it didn't make sense timeline-wise, because the girls were also at the ball, right?
Oh, that
so makes sense. But I mean, I guess Lady Featherington was too. Was she not? No, Lord Featherington was.
Oh yeah, yes, they were at Vauxhall.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that they deleted that scene, but there was a deleted scene that they listened. So that's how they found out, is that they listened on the door or whatever. But, she was like, Penelope has a question. She's like, no, I don't. Shut up. Like, get out of here. No one. And then, finally she asks, and Lady Featherington just looks at Lord Featherington and is like, do you see what I have to deal with, sir? And he was like, quit your histrionics, you know, like, get over it. And then,
I like Varley when she's... They know, ma'am.
Yeah, like, Marley, like, comes over and is like, they know, ma'am, sorry.
He started laughing.
Because she was standing with her. Yeah. She was standing with her, so she heard them, you know?
Obvious, but it had to be said, right?
Yeah, for sure. It was
so funny.
Yeah, and then they're like, why do we have to stay away from her, Mama? And she's like, because it's catching. And all three of the girls are like,
I don't want it. I don't want to be sick.
I don't want to have a baby touching someone or being around them, right? But it was just funny the way that she said it. And then I think they did a very good job with that, into showing how naive and how much young Mrs. of the Ton knew nothing about reproduction.
Yeah.
You know, even Prudence, who is way older than Penelope, didn't know either. And she's trying to get her to ask Lady Featherington, Penelope has a question for you, Mama. You know?
Yeah, like, they knew nothing. They would call it a condition. They would call it...
And it's catching.
Something that's not good for you, so...
Yeah.
You want to stay away from.
And all three girls look real upset. Like, we're not trying to catch a baby, you know?
Because her condition is catching. Did you see Penelope's face after? She's so shocked.
She's like...
I had to rewind. It was so funny.
Imagine being a 16, 17-year-old and you found out that pregnancies are contagious.
Please stay 6 feet away.
Sure. Oh, Lord. And then kind of like a cute little Easter egg. The kids we see running in the next scene is Tom's kids.
Yeah.
The director's kids. I love that. Then we get Penelope's. Walking with their ladies' maids behind them. Eloise is talking about Daphne and love. Does she think it's an accomplishment? Okay, so the line is, she certainly did not build that man or bake him. When we first were watching it together,
mm-hmm.
I thought... I laughed out loud so hard because I thought she said she certainly did not build the man from bacon. I remember you were like, what did they say? And I was like, she built him from bacon. Such an idiot.
Whenever I watch it now, I still hear bacon when I know it's bake him. I love it so much.
Yeah,
I need that accent just to say bacon.
Yeah, bacon. He likes her face. He likes her face, probably. Perhaps her hair. Not an accomplishment. And she's like, you know, I want to go to university, but I can't because I'm not a man. And then she looks up at Nellie and she's like, you're not even listening to me. Why? And then she's like, I know someone with child. And Eloise is like, is this your mama? Is she not advanced in age? Yeah. I mean, I guess you still want a boy. And Penelope says, it is a maid. And Eloise is like, which one of her maids are married? She's like, she's not married. And she's like, well, then how does she become with child? And she's like, I don't know. But I'm going to find out. She's like, you must. We have accomplishments to acquire. Like, how are we going to not let this happen to us if you're not married and have a baby? So yeah. it's just very
interesting. That can't happen to us.
We have accomplishments to acquire. I love that. And I think they just really dug their heels in on the whole how naive and innocent these girls really, really are, you know. And
that's already two households,
right? Yeah. And you know, when we were part of the readathon, everyone was just like, a sibling didn't tell them, you know, like as big as our house is, a sibling didn't tell them. And people even were saying that, like, they had a hard time believing Eloise, as outspoken as she is in the show, that she didn't ask someone. So as a thing in the book, she does later on ask someone. She pays
to bribe her
and get the information that is needed. But at this point, none of them know. And I think that they really drove home the fact that these girls were not allowed to do a lot, right? Can't go to college, can't know how babies were made, can't walk on the street alone, their ladies' maids are right behind them. So
I did find some information, though, because Eloise is like, I want to go to university. She keeps bringing it up. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what I was researching, but I got to this website, oxfordroyale.com, and they're talking about... Mm-hmm. Oh, I was researching, like, education. Because then if you read Eva Dunmore's Bringing Down the Duke, there's education for women. But it was just kind of like courses and classes, not yet colleges. But that's in Victorian age. We are in, like, Regency Georgian age right now. Mm-hmm. So there's this movement called the Blue Stocking Movement, something that Eloise wants to be. Yeah. So that's where all of this is coming from. I think they took that movement... maybe, and then just put it into the show.
Yeah.
So.
And if you read the series and you read the spinoff series, even the first book of The Smythe Smith, Honoria was promised to get lessons with gentlemen at university, but it was one professor who let them sit in Greek classes where they didn't even understand. And it was private, right? It was a private class, and they didn't understand the class anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, that's just how much... back then, women were not allowed to even have an education.
And in the Georgian times, too, they had this whole thing. The article said, like, it was called the separate spheres, where it kind of divided guys and girls even further, where they wanted the guys to go and have an education and go to school and be head of households. And they wanted the aristocratic girls to learn how to take care of a household. Yeah. So, like, the divide into going to university was even greater for her.
They would need to know math for accounting, but not anything like science or anything scholarly. Yeah. It was just how to run a household. And that is what Violet says she has prepared Daphne for.
Yeah, a household. How to run a household.
And so we go back into the Bridgerton drawing room. Hyacinth is just so happy for Daphne. Violet's like, she danced with him twice, you know? Like, they're just so excited that she is getting all this attention. She keeps looking at Rose for some reason, and Rose just keeps shaking her head. And Colin, this is such a brotherly moment, right? Colin's like, are you sure? They weren't just eyeing a tear in her dress. And Benedict is like, or a misstep she took on the dance floor. And Violet's like, no, you should have seen it. And she's like, oh, is the Duke going to be here? Is the Duke going to be there? You know? And Hyacinth is like, how terrible for Fran to be practicing her pianoforte with Aunt Winnie all season. She's not going to see the engagement to the Duke or the marriage to the Duke. And then we hear Gregory say, did Francesca leave for Bath? So that was all that they did with addressing Francesca leaving. Yeah. And a lot of people did miss that. Gregory didn't even finish his question yet. Eloise storms in and she is like, how does a lady become with child? And Daphne, like, you know, I imagine it's like modern day record, like, yeah, you know, like, what? And Daphne completely
hit the brakes.
Yeah. Daphne completely stops playing and it just looks like, what? And then Violet, she's like, And then she's like, I thought one needed to be married. Apparently, it's not even a requirement. And then Daphne's like, what are you talking about, right? And Violet's like, sit your ass down, woman, lady, girl, go. And then she's like, Daphne, you were doing so great. Keep playing, right?
And trying to change subject.
Yeah, yeah. And that's when I noticed that there's a huge portrait of what I'm assuming is Violet, Edmund, and Anthony.
So young Anthony, right?
Yeah, it's cute. It's so cute. So Violet's like, that is more than enough. Sit down, ma'am. And Colin and Benedict are in the background behind Violet. They are trying so hard not to laugh. And I was just like, God, they did that so well. And as Eloise approaches them, Colin is just laughing at Eloise. Benedict is refusing to even make any kind of eye contact. He's looking anywhere. And so she sits down and she like smacks both of them. She's like, I take it the two of you know. And Benedict is like, don't look at me. Nope, not doing this today. And Colin is like, have you ever visited a farm, Elle? And Benedict reaches over, smacks the shit out of Colin's head, and he just starts hella laughing. But while he did that, he hit Eloise too, so Eloise just starts grunting. And you can see Rose all the way in the corner just kind of like
laughing.
Yeah. And then Lila,
they're like, asking the wrong people.
Yeah, yeah. And Violet was like, are you encouraging improper topics of conversation? And Benedict was like, oh, not at all, mother, you know. Colin like gets up and he's like, in fact, we are just heading off to take our sticks out. Oh my God. And Violet whips around so fast and just screams his name, Colin Bridgerton. And he's like, a round of fencing. And then you look at Benedict and he's trying really hard not to laugh. And Eloise just like, I don't get it.
What's going on?
I don't understand. What's so funny? I'm sure that was supposed to be funny, but I don't get it. And then they like they share this look and this like shit eating grin, and they like leave the drawing room. And
just sly faces.
It was so good. And then Rose is like, Miss Humboldt is coming. And then you're like, who's Humboldt? But the butler.
If he's coming, it's a big deal.
Yeah, he's coming into the drawing room. And then everyone's like, Humboldt is coming. And then we find out that Daphne has callers. Violet's, but why? You have the Duke who's calling. She's like, well, now I have more callers. Weird, right? Like, she's just like,
I don't know where they came from.
Oh, that's so strange, mother. We have to accommodate all of them.
Yeah. You know? Humboldt is coming.
Yeah, Humboldt is coming, you know, and she just, it's so great. And then we see there are plenty callers outside. Like, it looks like Marina's house, you know, like, I'm not Featherington's Marina's house. It is just popping. There's carriages, there's super congestion, it's just crazy. And then Anthony and Burbrook roll up and both of them are like, the hell is happening? And this is kind of from the book too, because when Anthony walks into the drawing room, that face is reserved for Simon though. But they're just kind of like, what is happening? And then Burbrook just doesn't shut up the entire time, right? Like, he's just like, blah, blah, blah. You said, blah, we're meeting the family. I did not know. He's just, like, yapping. Peter Pettigrew was, like, yapping, right?
I wore my satin knee breeches for this.
I know. I just love Anthony walks into the house and just launches his hat at the closest footman. And the footman
pushes people.
He's like, Moe, get out of my way. And then, like, just, like, and you see these men with, like, boxes and huge bouquets of flowers, and it's just so crazy. And like, if you look inside of that, once you get into the drawing room, there's like, what, 20-30 guys in there,
and a whole lot of like bouquets
and boxes.
Violet's holding a bouquet.
I was like, oh my gosh. But that, I love that they did that, because it just shows how grand and large that drawing room is, that it fit all those gentlemen plus all of their presents, plus Daphne, Violet, the younger Bridgertons, and Burbrook.
Oh, gosh.
And
I think he gets hit by a flower arrangement.
Yeah.
So funny.
It's so hilarious.
It's so fast, but folks, you have to rewind. It's so good. Yeah.
I love it. He's just trying to do his duty, you know, and
be calm at the same time.
He's just like, everyone, he's like, you need to leave. He's like, everyone needs to leave. So the next thing is Anthony just shutting the door out on the rest of the men. Anthony is like, I would like to know what the hell is going on here. And Violet's like, me too. You interrupted a perfectly good, day. And he's just so stuck on Burbrook. And Anthony and Violet kind of like start going back and forth. And he's just like, you know, she's already engaged, and Violet's like, oh, the Duke has already proposed. And then
I love how excited she was.
And then, like, she's like, no. Daphne's like, I have not received a real proposal, and I have not proposed to anyone. You know, like, it's just like, the back and forthness is just, it's just so good. And then Daphne's like, dude, it's so disrespectful that you're promising me to Nigel Burbrook, you know. And then Anthony, which is very fact, was like, you have suitors. And he's like, not proposals. He's the only one that proposed. And I was like, ooh, I mean, that's true, you know?
That's so true, but give her time.
Yeah, right? I know. And then she can't put in a word because Violet and Anthony keep going back and forth. And Violet's like, whatever happened to his eye? It's quite grotesque. And Daphne's like, yeah. And it's like, Daphne has charmed a Duke that changes everything. And he is just like, they dance a couple times at a ball. Colin has done the same with Penelope Featherington. It does not signify foreshadowing.
Yes.
They promenaded this morning and he sent flowers today to both of us. Once again, this is for Julia Quinn. And Daphne like doesn't know what to say. So she's like, expensive ones. and he is like, he's not serious. He's not a serious suitor. He will never marry. It's not bravado or denial or even immaturity. And Violet dead ass looks Anthony in his eye and was like, it certainly appears that way. You know, yeah. Like deadpan. And Anthony just shut up. He was just like, oh, because she's calling him out, you know. And Daphne's like, I will not marry Nigel. Like during this tense moment between Anthony and Violet. And Anthony's like, it's happening. I'm going to drop the papers, you know, like, bye, you know? And so Violet's like, don't worry, girl. As soon as the Duke shows that he's serious, Nigel will leave. He might not take what a woman says for serious, but once a man, you know? And that just once again shows you where, what kind of society they were living in, right? And then she's like, well, you know, just in case, you know, the Duke is, you know, he's just, you know, not interested. There's others, right? And Violet, there's only the Duke. It's like, fuck.
I saw how he looked at you last night.
Yeah, I saw how you guys looked at each other. There are no others. There's only the Duke. I was like, shit. She is in trouble.
But she also did mention in the morning, so
yeah,
they're faking it is working.
Yeah, yeah. And then we get someone punching the bejesus out of Simon. You hear that, like, that ringing noise that you get when you get hit in the head really hard. And we meet Will, who is inspired by the actual boxer Bill Richman. Will recently said in an article that he took boxing lessons and that this is his first actual acting gig.
Wow, I love it. He's good though.
He is. He's a theater kid. And this is his first actual
like film.
And he was saying that he was so nervous because, you know, it's a great cast. You know, I mean, hello, we have Julie Andrews. I mean, if you just hear Julie Andrews, you're going in there, even though she's just a voiceover, you don't know that. You're like, knees are shaking, you know, coming in. But he said that Chris Van Dusen always made time for him. Anytime he had questions, no one made him feel like the new kid. And it was just really great. And then him and Simon had this great bromance together.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I do too. It's so cute. And you know what, guys? I'm not into muscles. I know a lot of you guys are.
Yeah, but you don't like muscles.
Mm-mm. No.
But he looked good.
Oh my God, he's so fine. But
I'm glad he branched out from theater to film.
Yeah, and he's in contention as well to potentially be the next Bond. I mean, I don't watch Bond movies, but hello.
But we gotta keep hush hush though, because the cursed thing is, like, if you say you want to be Bond, you're never gonna be Bond.
So Reggae was like, it's a British thing. If you're doing good and you're British, they're like, ooh, Bond. You know? Like, it's like it's a rite of passage that there's a rumor. And he's like, and so we made it. We're good. But yeah, so he was just so humble and so grateful. And he said everyone made him feel so nice. And he loved playing this character because it represents even a struggle that we have today, right? Like, do you choose honor? Do you choose doing what's right for your family? There are class issues. There's, you know, so it's just, and knowing the right people, but, you know, at the same time as well too, like just doing what you think is best for your family to survive, right? And also, he was saying that he just loved the wife that he had as well too in the show, because it shows that you can be a strong woman and have a physically strong man and have this man turn into putty when it comes to his kids and his wife. So he just loved that contrast, and I loved it. It was such a great article. I think it's on Bazaar, Harper's Bazaar, if you guys would like to read it. We did post it in our story, so just let us know if you would like the link to it. So he is based on a boxer named Bill Richmond, who was a British boxer born a slave in Richmond Town, Staten Island, New York. Although born in British America, he lived for the majority of his life in England, where all his boxing contests took place. Richmond went to England in 1777, where he had his education paid for. He then apprenticed as a cabinet maker in York. In the early 1790s, Richmond married a local English woman whose name was probably Mary Dunwick. Richmond and his wife have several children. During the American Revolutionary War, Earl Percy witnessed teenage Richmond in tavern balls involving British soldiers. Percy subsequently arranged fights with other British soldiers for the entertainment of his guests. In 1777, Percy arranged for Richmond's freedom. And a fun fact is, in the 1820s, Richmond ran a boxing academy in which he trained many amateur boxers, including literary figures like William Hazlitt, Lord Byron, and American John Neal. Kind of cool. I love it.
Tying it into Lord Byron again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Always goes back to Lord Byron. Basically, they're chatting. It's like, wait, you danced with her twice? And we discussed this before. This is how gentlemen take out their aggression when they're stressed or if they're feeling some type of way, they get the piss beaten out of them. And then Anthony comes and asks if he can have a word with the Duke. And Will is like, yeah. my fist is tired of meeting his chin. Anthony is like, do I need to go up there? Like, he's just so flustered and frustrated. He goes in there and they start kind of like, you know, like, are you courting my sister? And Simon's like, should I not be courting your sister? And he's like, she's already engaged to be married. He's like, oh, I did not know. Have the bands been read?
Playing with him, right?
For sure.
Riling him up, goading him.
Yeah. And as we mentioned before, the bands are read for at least 3 weeks in church for an upcoming nuptial. So they keep going back and forth. And then, you know, Simon's like, you insult your sister by trying to pair her with Nigel Burbrook, because Anthony has no clue what had happened. And then he was like, you're the best of friends. He's like, I do not mean to offend you. And he's like, but surely family must come before all else. And oh, that was such a striking blow to Simon, because he doesn't know anything about that.
And before that, he's like, she is my sister. And he kept saying
it. And we're going to come right back around to, she is my sister. Yeah, and then we get a flashback of when Simon is 4. This is from the books. The Duke is kind of like, why the hell has he not spoken? Nurse Hopkins was like, he is really great in his letters. And the Duke, because he's a dick, was like, he's got to be bloody Shakespeare if he doesn't speak, you know. And he was like, you're too soft-handed with him. Maybe I need, and she's like, you're scaring him. He's like, good. Maybe that's going to make him speak. And so he takes a metal brush. And he's
Silver brush.
Right,
like in the book.
Yes. Lifts it, ready to strike him. And Simon says, no.
Like in the book. I love that. So cute.
Yeah. And that kid was so adorable. And he's like, what did you say?
But there was like that glimpse of like that quick
hope and proudness.
Yes.
Like, and you almost feel like, okay, not too bad. And then as soon as Simon starts stuttering, he's like, do not hit me. The Duke is just nasty. He's like, you've put us in a very shitty situation. We've been granted this line, and the way to keep it is we need to remain extraordinary. And he was just like, you're dead to me. The line is going to be passed on to an imbecile. And it was just so... And Simon starts crying, and he's just like, doesn't care. He's like, get him out of here. Yeah. He's dead to me. It was awful.
He is ridiculous. Do you feel... how I feel where he's worse in the show?
I think that at this point, he's just accurate. At the next point, though, he is worse. At this point, he's extremely accurate to the books. Because it's almost word for word. They change it a little bit because, you know, like, they were granted this title instead of the title being in the family for so long. So that changed a little bit. So up to that point, it was very accurate to me. But then the next flashback is when I was like, damn.
Asshole.
I just couldn't even. So we go back to the Featherington house. We see Marina looking at some letters. Can I also say that I really like that it's letters? Because with...
it old to...
the letters.
Yeah.
I guess that's all I can say. Sorry, I don't want to ruin it for anybody that hasn't read it. It's kind of an Easter egg for a future story. And we'll leave it at that. But if you watch the show and you paid attention, there's literally a book title after this person, and you can probably put it all together. But we're just going to say it's just really cute that it's letters. And she's like, I found a couple sweets, like, you know, and she's like, there's plenty, like, you can come in, it's fine. And she, like, Penelope is just so freaking kind and adorable.
I love their little friendship.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So she got there. She's like, oh, she's beautiful. Yeah. And she's like, oh, another person I can talk to.
Yeah.
Because my sisters are ridiculous.
Oh my gosh. I know. She's like, I know about your condition. Like, how did it happen? And Marina, before she takes a bite, she's like, cake. And Penelope is like, she's already eating this cake at this point, right?
She's looking at it.
She's like, excuse me?
To eat or not to eat? Yeah. That is the question.
Seriously. And she tells her a story about her time in Somerset, which that is an Easter egg for our next book. And this is when we hear about the eldest Crane boy, George, Sir George Crane. Huge Easter egg. And like we mentioned before, she was wearing the Eye of George on her necklace. And he is currently in Spain fighting with Wellington. In conclusion, her condition was brought about by love, which confuses Penelope even more. She is like, oh, okay, you're better off saying cake. Because I have no idea what you're even talking about right now. And we get to the queen, and the queen is bored. She wants to be She's like, why has there not been a good match this season? I want to be entertained. There's literally someone bending over backwards right in front of her, and she could not care less. And Brimsley comes in and was like, the doctor wants to see you. And she didn't care. She was like, yeah, whatever.
Tell the royal physician to call me if it has to do with anything with my husband dying. Yeah. You know, that's it.
And I think it just kind of shows you right there that that's what Whistledown was for the queen as well, too, is her own form of escapism. Because there was just a lot going on in her life, and she's trying really hard to not think about everything, right? So she literally has someone doing, like, folding themselves in half in front of her, but she just wants to read Whistledown because everybody else's problems is better to deal with.
Hers.
Which, how many of us do that, right? We focus on everyone else's situations, so we ain't gotta focus on us.
Yes.
Me. Every time. All up in everybody's Kool-Aid, and I haven't mixed my own Kool-Aid yet. Also, another thing to kind of point out as well is that in the show, the queen has Pomeranian dogs. Yeah? The little poofy dogs?
Yes.
But in real life, she had corgis. But we all know in the Bridgerton world, there's only one corgi that matters. Not matters, but...
No matters. I'm going to agree with that.
So I believe they changed that on purpose. She's like, bring me my stationery. And basically what she did is she invites Violet to tea. And back at the Bridgerton house, everyone's still so stuck on the whole Duke thing. And even Rose and Violet exchange looks like, why is she wanting anyone else but the Duke, you know? And then after Violet gets invited to tea with the Queen, everybody's gushing. She lets Daphne put on the family diamonds. And then we get Simon waiting for Lady Danbury. And she's like, would it pain you to wear some color, Your Grace? You know, she's just like, everything is just so boring already. Like, and he's like, I was told this was all the rage. And she's just like, not to me. And then it kind of switches over to another flashback that is completely added in for show only. So this part does not happen in the prologue. And Lady Danbury was like, oh, so you're not dead. And she's like, I haven't heard from you. Like, you know, like no one's seen from you, nothing. And it would make my dear friend weep to find that, you know, that her dearest friend has no relationship with her son.
Yeah.
And
or if he doesn't even know about her at all.
Yeah, that doesn't even exist. And so she kind of like curtsies and she's like, Lady Danbury, you know, and she's like, oh, I see no one's taught you manners. And that's when she finds out, she's like, are you fencing? Are you doing this? Are you writing? Are you writing? And he's like, yep. She's like, well, then why are you not in school? And he sadly looks over at Nurse Hopkins and she nods and he says, I cannot speak. Lady Danbury takes 1 second to assess the situation and she's like 100 million years ago I used to be afraid of my own shadow. I decided to make myself frightening. I sharpened my wit, my wardrobe, my eye. I made myself the most terrifying creature in any room I entered. And she said, come. She's like, you can speak. I understood you well enough and I will help you overcome this stammer of yours. But in exchange, you must promise me that when you step into the light, you will be worthy of the attention you command. That's my favorite scribble. Like,
I wrote that down as a favorite too.
Yeah.
That whole speech.
Yes. And I just, to me, as someone who was bullied, it was easier to become frightening, you know, to just change the persona and
be unpredictable,
yes. Which I think I still am on certain days in my life now, almost 40, you know. I remember there was something that was on Facebook recently, and this kid that I worked with like a billion years ago, he's like low-key still really scared of Wendy Wu because I was a manager for him once. And you know, and you know, you have to adapt. You can either lash out or you can, like she said, sharpen your wardrobe, sharpen your wit, sharpen your eye, right? And there is no sharper person in the ton than Lady Danbury.
Yes. But I love what she did. Like, you can be all of these, just have good intentions, at least. Be a good person.
Yep.
Be worthy of being terrifying.
Yeah. Right? Be worthy of it. Be worthy of the light and the attention that you're gonna get. I love that so much because she could have like built him on hatred, which there was plenty of, and she would have every right, but she didn't. And that kind of just shows you already the complexity of Simon, right? And Simon and Lady Danbury walk into the ball and all of the ladies' mouths are ajar. I mean, come on, he was a vision. He is so fine. And Daphne walks in right behind them and he immediately asks her to dance. Anthony is about to be like, oh, hell no. And Lady Danbury is like, oh, well, then
Blocking.
Yeah, straight up. She was just like, skirt. She's like, I need an escort to get my ratafia. And she's like, Lord Bridgerton, will you do the honor? You know, and you can't slight her, right?
Yeah.
So
no one.
He had to. So I looked it up and I was like, what is that? It sounds delicious. So it could be one of two things. It could be what today's current day is almond liqueur. An amaretto, essentially, or it can be wine.
Oh, both great?
Yes, for sure. But although the wine said it was grapes and fermented juice, so for me, hard pass.
Oh, I
would want to go with the amaretto, for sure. For sure. And then Daphne is like, we need to fan the flames. No, six balls no longer. It needs to be eight. And she's like, he's like, Burbrook. And she's like, ugh, ew. And and he's like, I heard. And so she was like, so we got to pretend like we're enjoying each other's company. And you can tell they love being with each other because they can be themselves. And they go, this is probably one of my favorite dances that they do. All of their dances,
actually. Because they're having fun.
They're having so much fun. Lady Danbury is jamming on the side. Yes. Violet's like she's already picking out the curtains in Hastings' house, you know. She's ready, and I just love it. And you can see Anthony and Benedict watching from behind. Anthony is just hella scowling, and Benedict is like, just has this like smile, like he's so happy for his sister, yeah?
Yeah. And then, he's like, no idea what's happening.
No clue at all. And then there's like women that are looking like, oh, I want that, you know, like this. Some of they're just like so enamored by how striking they are and how much fun they're having, right? Because fun was not that, right? It was not parading around the ton, like, for sure not.
It was work trying to get a suitor.
Yeah,
that's what it was. Yeah, it was work.
It was crazy. And like they're hopping back and forth thing, I was like, I love it. The kangaroo hop. I don't know. It was so cool. As soon as the dance ends, Benedict is still smiling, and Anthony is just like, go dance with your sister. He's like, what? Like, why? Like, why me? Yes. And he was like, because I said so. And then Anthony follows Simon into the wine room, I'm assuming.
The refreshment room.
The champagne room. No, it's not the champagne room. He's like, did I not make myself clear earlier? And then he's like, which part, you know, like he's like, the part where you're gonna promise your sister to an odious toad. And Nigel Burbrook at that exact moment is like, hello. hello. And he just says he wants her for such shallow things, her beauty, her grace, you know. And Simon's like, her powerful right hook.
And Anthony looks back like, what?
He's like, oh, hello, what's happening? And he's like, yeah, you know, to avoid further embarrassment. And Simon just keeps adding in like quips from the side. Yes. You know? And then Nigel got some cojone and was just like, are you too friendly?
Yes.
By the Duke, or simply intimidated by his rank? Anthony was
the
like,
nerve.
Yeah. Anthony was like, easy. And you know, like Simon's like ready to like pummel him, right? And Simon's giving him dead ass death stare. I think at that moment he signed
He had enough of Nigel's bullshit.
Yeah, that's it. Nigel just basically sealed the deal. Simon was going to out him, you know, like by saying all that. Anthony is like, you know, none of this is the Duke's concern. And Simon, because he's pissed, he's had enough, is like, perhaps you're not the authority on what concerns me, nor on the matter of Lord Burbrook's character. And like the two people that were standing closest to them were like, oh, we're in the best seat in the house. What is happening? Right. And they're like, oh, dang, you know. And he was just like, you know, she will learn to like me one day. Barf. Just gross.
Continues to be creepy. Just and I love
gross.
It.
Gross. His teeth. I just literally cannot. And then Simon's like, do come off it, Burbrook. I presumed you failed to mention how he got that purple eye. He's like, I was careless with the cabinet door. And Simon's like, you were careless with your honor. I was like, oh god, I love him so much. Yeah,
I love this scene.
It was so good. Yeah. It was so good. Anthony's just like, wait, what? He's like, he attempted something last night. I shan't dignify with words when your sister planted a facer. And Anthony was just like, what the heck, right? And then they basically like confront him. They like bow up next to him, right? He looks over at her and was like, nah, she would have told me. Mm. And Simon's like, would she?
And he's shocked. His face like, oh,
he looks so wouldn't hurt. She?
like, what's wrong with me? Kind of deal. Like, yeah. Everything. So many different feelings in that look.
I know. He honestly deserved that because he wasn't listening to her. He wasn't trying to listen to her. And if he would have stopped arguing with Violet for 5 seconds earlier in the drawing room, Daphne would have been like, it was me. I punched him, you know? But she couldn't even get it out before they kept arguing. So he puts down his glass and just gets in Berberk's face. Him and Simon do it at the same exact time, which was just so intimidating. And he is like, we are to be married. Like, just doesn't get the hint at all. And then,
kind of like in the books, but worse here.
Yeah, way, in worse. The way creepier, for sure. Yeah. He's like, you are to be buried if you so much, like, look at her direction, you know? At this point, Simon's, like, trying to, like, calm Anthony down a little bit, right? And then Daphne sees kind of what's going on. She's not dumb. She knows what's happening. And she leaves Benedict. Everyone in the refreshment area is, like, kind of looking over.
Yeah, trying to get closer.
Yeah. And then Anthony is like, be grateful not another that you're not going to get another punch from another Bridgerton, right? And
yes, I love that.
Yeah. And then Daphne's like, what is happening? He's like, it is done. You no longer have to marry that toad, right? And you can see that he wants to say so much more, but he's hurt. He's disappointed in himself. And once again, this pressure that he puts on himself, like, you can see on his face. And can I say, what great acting?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
looking so pained. And then just, like, you know, it's like when you're so mad and you just have to leave.
Yeah.
That's what happened. And I loved it.
And, like, he leaves and he's disappointed in himself. Daphne comes over and scolds Simon and is like, you do not know what you just did. Nigel is fucking entitled, you know, and you just made it worse. Yeah. He's like, don't worry about it. She's like, are you joking? And she's just kind of like, just walks out and just makes like fake ass smiles to everyone in the room.
Because the point of them being together, Simon and Daphne, is to show the ton and Nigel, like, hey, we're together, we're courting.
Yeah.
Because she tried telling Nigel and it didn't work.
Yeah.
And now they're trying to tell Nigel and it's not gonna work.
Yeah. And Simon looks around like, wait, I was just, hello, I was honorable. I came to your defense. Hello, why are you mad? I don't understand. Like, he's just like, wait, what's happening? And then we cut to the end of the night. Lady Danbury is like, what a crush. And, you know, kind of basically is like, Daphne is a gem. She's such a jewel. Like, don't fuck this up, you know? And Simon, you know, indulges her, gives her a smile, and decides to take the airs and walk home. And he hears footsteps behind him. So he balls up his fist and he's ready to turn around. And it happens to be Berbrook. And he's like, are you following me? Like, hello? What the heck is your problem? And he's like, I thought we resolved this. And he was like, you're a duke. Like, you don't need her. I need her. And just the way that he says that, like, I just hate it. You just hate him even more. And he was like, well, I really think this should be up to Miss Bridgerton.
And you love Simon even more, right?
Yes, yes. And it should. At the end of the day, it's up to her what she wants. Which, you know, words that'll come back to bite him in his ass. But, and then Berbrook, the worst human ever, is like, when I'm buying a horse, I do not negotiate with the horse. I was like,
you bitch.
But that was the time.
Yes, that was the time.
When you were on the marriage market, you were literally like cattle and horse. Like, what is your breed? You know, like, how what is your endurance? Like, that's what they care about. How old are you? How strong are you? Like, they don't care about anything else. And so the fact that they brought that in, it was just such a good comparison of how these women were treated back then, you know? And he was like, if you want her so much, like, why haven't you proposed unless you've already had her? And he's like, if she's soiled and not intact. And I was like, my God. At that point, I was like, he needs to get punched. And when Simon turns around and is like, do not, you know,
dishonor her.
Dishonor her. How dare you? I will not hear of it, kind of thing. And then he basically talks shit about his mom, about his father, and Simon just has this such a pain in his eye, and he turns around and just beats the shit.
Gloves off. Like, that was
bare knuckle. Wow. Like, beats him. So a couple people made a comment, like, how is Daphne able to just knock him out with one hit, where Simon, who is a trained boxer, Nigel was still fine, you know, like, how. And I think that distinction is from the books, that Nigel was already super drunk when Daphne hit him.
Yes, he was.
So
Laffy, that's how.
Yeah.
Laffy, he wasn't even calling her Daphne anymore. It's Laffy.
Yeah. And so that's the big distinction. And I think you don't really get that unless you read the books. So that's how Daphne was able to do it in one punch, as where Simon delivered multiple punches and Nigel was still left mumbling and grumbling. And we then get the flashback to 11-year-old Simon. And, oh gosh, this is where I was like, the father is worse. Because in the book, he at least was like, the Duchess at least did her duty. You know, she knew her role in life. But here, he says about Simon, as well as the mother, like, I will do what I did to you about your mother. Like, I will forget that you've ever sullied these hallways. Like, it was just so terrible. He tells Lady Danbury to shut her bitch mouth and to know her place.
Oh, wow.
I know. And he basically is like, I wrote to you, you know? And he's like, so? I don't want to be reminded of what a failure you are. And he was like, I just wanted you to know that I'm not dead. He's like, you might as well be. Like, it was just awful.
Horrible,
to an 11-year-old child. In the books, it was like, it was then that Simon decided that he was going to be everything his father was not. Obviously, probably with Lady Danbury's help, he got into school. But in the books, he went to Eton and was like, what do you mean you don't have my paperwork? What do you mean I'm not enrolled? I am the Earl of Cliveden. I am the future Duke of Hastings.
He said, and this is months into school.
Like, he just did everything that his dad would have done, and did the eyebrow like his dad, mannerisms like his dad. They enrolled him post haste, and then it wasn't for months until the Duke found out that he's been paying for this. But you know, at that point, you can't pull him out. It's a shame, right? It's embarrassing. Yes. So,
and he was doing well. So
he was doing well. So that's how he, you know, he was like, I'm first in this. I'm doing well here. I'm doing well there. And that's kind of like the last of the young Simon flashback that we get. But it was enough. And then it flashes to the present day. Simon with his bruised knuckles from beating up Burbrook. And he's looking at these letters that he asked his dad about when he was 11. Still unopened, wax seal, still
intact. Not broken.
Ugh. Gosh.
It shows he didn't care.
He didn't give a fuck. And then we get a frustrated Daphne reading Lady Whistledown. How, like, is she empty-headed? Is she an empty-headed ninny? Like, she has a duke chasing her and she's entertaining a baron? Like, the hell? You know? So, like, she's really upset. And, you know, everyone's so hung up on the duke, and she knows it's fake. She's the only one that knows it's fake, right? And so she's like, stop talking about him. And Rose is like, do you not like the rouge? And she's like,
I'm just trying to make your cheeks rosy.
Yeah, I like it a lot. Go put more. So then they're at the park. And I just love this little, like, very short scene of Colin and Anthony playing with Hyacinth and Gregory.
Yes.
And you get to see Anthony, like, just be really this doting, caring brother that he is. He really is at the end of the day. And just Colin just, like, smiling and being happy and goofy along with Anthony. Benedict is on the side, like, eating, just not caring.
It should be Colin eating, actually, to be more accurate.
It should be Colin eating, but it is accurate that Colin is the one being goofy with the younger ones, because that is his personality. Benedict, I think, once again, is just stuck in, like, what he does want, you know?
And to be fair, Colin's eating scenes got taken out, he was eating a lot.
Yeah.
They just had to cut it.
Cressida walks by, and she's like, basically saying that Daphne makes a good match with bumbling Burbrook.
What a bitch.
Oh, that girl, man.
She's so good.
She has two lines in every episode, and they're cutting.
Yeah.
They're so cutting, and they're so good. And then Eloise walks over to the Featherington tent and kind of like waves at Penelope. And Penelope's like, Mama, might I go play with Eloise? And she's like, you're a lady. Ladies do not play. She's like, oh, I'm sorry, Mama. Might I promenade for suitors with Eloise?
I love this scene. I could watch it like 10 times and then watch it another 10 times. Seriously. So cute.
And Lady Featherington's like, yeah, yes, whatever.
Very well.
Yeah.
Very well then.
Just go.
You said it correctly.
Yes. But I love that they did that as well too, because it shows how young Penelope is.
Yes.
And how used to her asking to go play with Eloise she is. Yes. So I love that they did that. So Eloise is like, so did you find out how it happened? Like how she became of the family way, you know, like, and she's like, love. And she's like, what? She's like, I know, it doesn't make sense, because look at my parents, they had 3 kids, and you know they ain't in love. Yeah. So she's like, you need to find out more, you know, and she's like, oh, but don't worry, she's going to run away with her lover. And Eloise says, more reason to be frightened, when she is married, her life is over, scarcely an escape. And gosh, are those some foreshadowing for this maid, right? Anthony finally, he looks over, sits down, and talks to Daphne, like, why didn't you tell me? He's like, do you esteem me so little? She's like, yeah. She's like, I dead ass told you that I didn't want anything to do with Berber. I knew you wouldn't respect my wishes, you know? And Anthony just looks so hurt and so, ugh. It is so heartbreaking because he's just trying to do the right thing, and every time he just mucks it up. I just feel really bad, and so she sees Simon writing in, and she jumps up hella fast. She's like, bye.
Yeah.
And then he's like, sorry, I'm late. Do you want to return to your family tent? And she's like, hell no. Get me away from them, right?
We need to promenade.
Yeah, so she promenades over to a bunch of gentlemen playing lawn games or whatever they're doing, and she holds out her cuff, and she's like, button it. And he's like, excuse me? She's like, button my cuff, bitch. Like,
Regency flirting.
Yeah, for sure. And as soon as he grabs her wrist, all the gentlemen turn in. They're like, pss, 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 like whispering with each other, right?
Making sure they're seeing this.
Yeah.
Happening.
Oh. I love it. And then they kind of get on about marriage, and Simon's like, well, if I did have to marry, you would be the least objectionable. And she's like, wow, what a compliment. Like being the least objectionable. And he's like, but it will never happen because you wish to marry for love. And he just looks at her and she's like, of course I do. And they this intense, crackling eye contact chemistry between them. It was crazy. And then the Burbrook storms in.
Looking more grotesque.
Yeah.
And in pain.
Oh, gosh. And then Daphne's like, what did you do? They go over to the tent. Burbrook has security, special license. He makes a little bit of a scene and then basically threatens to make a larger scene because it is Daphne's fault for being alone with him. As soon as Lady Whistledown hears, then it's over. You know?
Yes. The point was to be loud.
The point was to be dramatic because he needed that on his side. And like Daphne said, it just was going to fuel his entitlement. And for sure, it did. He went and got approved for a special license to get married in 3 days' time. And
you even see members of the ton, like, in the back, right?
Yeah.
Walking behind.
They're like, oh, shit. That's a real reason to promenade.
For scandal.
Yeah.
I love Violet's reaction when Berbrook went up to the tent. She had to do a double take.
She's like, oh, like, what the hell's wrong with you? Good. She's like, you look like you're in pain. You want to come inside? He's like, I do not. So.
He's ridiculous.
He is.
Love it.
And I love that Simon at one point tries to charge in and Benedict has to hold him back. And as Berbrook leaves, Simon looks at Daphne with sadness, and you don't know if that sadness is for her, for him, for the situation, for him causing the situation, but he
probably
just
like for her, and then like confusion, like, why am I feeling so strongly about this?
I should be fine. Yeah. I should be happy. And we do get a scene of that, you know, in a little bit when he's with Will, but Anthony is in the carriage. He's like, I'm going to duel this motherfucker. I'm going to call him out because this is what gentlemen do. And Violet's like, it is illegal. Like, hello. Like, stop it. And Daphne makes a really good point. She's just like, even if you do shoot him dead and he opens his tiny mouth and tells everyone that I was alone with him, like, I'm already ruined and all of her sisters are ruined. And you know, and she's like,
before the duel even starts. Yeah. Right?
And she's like, I must marry Burbrook. And Eloise is just like, and then she looks over at Violet, she's like, come on. And then she looks over at Anthony, she's like, God.
And her mouth's open.
Face, like, yeah, she's like, say something. But no one does, you know. And then the next scene is Daphne crying and throwing away all of the bouquets of flowers. All I could think about during that scene was the allergies. There was a lot of flowers in there. Holy God. But I was just like, ugh. But she's like throwing them all in a basket, like, and Violet comes in and tries to make her feel better, you know, just like, this, we're stuck in this situation and I know you wanted to marry for love, but you'll find joy in the children. And it's very contrasting because in a future episode, another mama says the same thing, that the children is what brings you joy if you don't have love, right? And
and that's what Violet had to do too when she lost Edmund.
Yeah.
So that was nice seeing it.
Yeah. Yeah, she had
from
to.
From her to Daphne.
She didn't give up and she never remarried because she invested all of her time and she found her happiness in her kids, right? Yeah. The scene ends with them kind of hugging and kind of like chuckling, like a FMLA chuckling, you know? Like, shucks, right? And then we see Eloise smoking on a swing. And then you hear Eloise Bridgerton. And she's like, ooh. And it happens to be Benedict. And she's like, go on. Chastise me. And he's like, spare one for me. And they have this beautiful bonding moment. And,
yes.
And she's just like, I don't want this. And she's scared because as soon as Daphne gets married, she has to be out.
Yeah.
So she's afraid. And she's also, the ones that are most vocal about how they don't want something are usually the ones that want it the most. So she just watched her sister chase a love match and potentially, you know, like, she got the Duke's attention and now at this point she has to marry this other guy, you know, and then now that means that she has to go into the marriage mart because her mom won't have anyone else to focus on. And she's scared and she's like, I want to do other things and I'm not allowed to do anything else. I'm only allowed to do this one thing, you know? And Benedict is like, well, you're not the only one.
I love that. They have this common thing that they have to go through. And they have different rules to follow.
Yeah. Second son, second daughter, right? And it's just kind of like she wants something that she cannot have because she's a woman. And he has something that he cannot do because of his place in society. So we'll get more into his story later. But I love that moment with them so much. And then the next scene is Simon and Will boxing. And Will's like, why aren't you happy? She's about to marry someone else, you know? He's just asking to get the piss beaten out of him. He's like, more. And he's not even winning. He's not even landing a single punch. And he just keeps telling Will to keep going. And
probably Will wants to get the feelings boxed out of him, right?
Yeah, because what is these feelings? Hello?
They're foreign feelings.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know.
That part reminded me of this meme that I saw my friend sent to me. They're like, this is you. And it was like, it was this guy stepping over this like pile of shit. And it was like, oops, almost stepped in some shit. And then it said feelings on it. And they were like, this is you. I was like, what? No. Yeah, he wanted literally the feelings to be knocked out of him. And like we just said, like, he's confused. Like, he should be happy. It's over. The ruse is over. And he can pretend to go away because his heart is broken because his potential bride is gone, you know? And he can cry out for the rest of the season. And instead, he's in his feelings. He's confused. And he's like, why do I feel like this? And just beat me up, you know? Make me numb. Because that's where it's safe, right? When you're numb. And Violet has tea with the queen. They walk by portraits of the actors who play the king and queen. Beautifully done. Just gorgeous. Guys, in this scene, she is sniffing snuff. And snuff is scented tobacco, which is like a really big thing back then. I have a question for you. Do you think the queen read Whistledown, saw that Daphne was still entertaining Burbrook and Simon, and called her there, did that whole thing as a way of a hint to get Burbrook out of the picture? Do you think it was on purpose?
Something was on purpose. Yeah, probably. I mean, that's, I think that's kind of her way. She wants to be like meddling in the middle of things.
Yes,
and just
yes.
Like, not, I don't want to say help out, but just she wants to be a part of the news.
Yeah, or, and she wants to point you in the right direction so that she's not wrong, right?
Because yeah, oh, that's right. Yeah.
Because if the diamond of the season marries bumbling Burbrook, she's wrong.
Like, super wrong.
Yes. So that's why she's like, but a match like that is enchanting indeed, right? So I think she was being over dramatic with the whole Brimsley and then bringing up the whole Mozart thing all on purpose to tell Violet to dig deeper. Like, you can find something to get rid of this guy. I think that whole scene was on purpose, and I loved it. And then as she leaves, the housekeeper, Violet's housekeeper, is like, what are we to do? And she's like, invite Lady Burbrook over for tea. Oh, my God. This lady is what nightmares are made of for mother-in-laws.
That's perfect casting, though, right?
So good. So good. So freaking good. And she's like, you know, I only had one son because he was perfect. And then Violet's like, goodness.
They chew the same loudly.
Yes. Love it. And like I said, I'm an ASMR ho, and I was disgusted. I was like cringed. And, you know, she was just, and then she's insulting Violet, right? Because Violet has four sons because her sons are not perfect, unlike her son Burbrook. She's like, and you know, Daphne, she's like, let me look at you. You know, he's had many handsome women, but he wants accomplishment. Basically saying, you ugly, but you smart. You know, like, like, she's just insulting both of them. And it was just like, wow. And then,
that's where Burbrook got it, though. Oh, right? Yeah. They're the same. I love it.
It was so gross. Good. It was so hilarious. And, you know, and then down below stairs, the housekeeper was like, oh, these biscuits are going real fast. She's like, don't worry, I got it. You know, and then Rose was like, ugh, housekeepers. You swear. They swear they're like the top of the food chain kind of thing, right? And then the lady's maid of Burbrook's mother was like, oh, I have one of those too. And she's like, oh, but you only got those two. How hard can it be? She's like, you have no idea.
Let's talk, right?
Yeah, and Rose leans in like, tell me more, girl. And Daphne looks so sick through the whole thing. Like, she looks like she's gonna vomit. She has,
I can't believe this is gonna
be my
mother.
No, she's so pale. She can't even say one word, right? And then in the end, she's like, oh, you're too skinny. Like, you know, in order to be healthy, make sure to eat kippers and rye. Like, she's like, that's how I got my Burbrook. Like, that's how I got my Nigel, right? Oh, gross.
Everybody stay away from kippers on rye.
Never eat kippers on rye. Ever. Hello? I was just like, oh my goodness. And then she leaves, and then Violet's like, tell me, what did you learn? And then Daphne's like, wait, what's happening here? And she's like, you don't think I like wanted her over for tea, right? And then
the help hears everything.
Yeah. And they share that Burbrook had a bastard child, and instead of taking care of that person, he sent her away without a penny.
Yeah.
And then,
no provisions at all.
Yeah. And Violet was like, do you think this is enough to make him go away forever? Definitely, like, for one second, she's like, ooh. And then she's like, wait, no one's going to believe us, you know? It's going to be our word against his. And Violet's like, not if Lady Whistledown writes about it. And she's like, and so we need to do what women do best. We talk. And they go straight to Madame Delacroix. And it just shows you what you do in those dress shops, right? You fucking gossip. It's because she's Madame Genevieve. It's just like, is that not the most lurid story you've ever heard of this season? And then Violet's like, oh, I got a better one, right? And you see Daphne in the corner just kind of like laughing. And that's when all of the news spreads like wildfire. This is what I wanted to ask you. This is kind of spoilery for the end, but the housekeeper sees the Featherington housekeeper and tells her about what had happened. And her first reaction was, every baron has a bastard. Do you think?
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh wait. I'm thinking about two things right mm-hmm. now. What are you thinking about?
I think that was the Easter egg for us about Lord Featherington.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Obviously.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. That I agree. Like with Felicity?
I think it's the heir.
The heir.
Or whoever's going to...
That's what I was thinking. Like, take over.
Yeah.
But I'm like, how will that work? Because he is a bastard.
True.
So that's why I said, yeah.
But
so
he might be the only one with blood, though.
You never know. You can get around it, I guess.
Yeah. We'll get there.
Well, they'll figure it out.
We'll get there when we get there.
That's good, though. Yeah. Like, if they do it that way, I want to know how they'll figure it out.
Yeah.
To get him legitimate.
Yeah. So, but because she says it so casually, you kind of miss it, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the Featherington housekeeper says, every baron has a bastard. Lord Featherington is a baron, so... And then the Bridgerton housekeeper is like, a bastard he sent away before the mist even popped. And then, like, she's like, you know? And that's when everything starts spreading like wildfire, even all the way back at a gentleman's club. You know it's bad when gentlemen are judging you, because they never judge you, because gentlemen get away with anything. So the fact that even the men servant in this gentleman's club are looking at him like, oh, hell no. You know, yeah. Like that's like how bad it was. Berbrook sees the article and dips. He leaves town unexpectedly. Then the next scene is Violet just giggling to herself because she is the shit and she is like embroidering, and Anthony comes in. You know, essentially apologizing. He should have done better. And she was like, now that Daphne is out, I am more than capable of handling all these situations. And the look on his face, like, I just, like, his acting is so good. Because you could see him struggling, right? That he basically just disappointed his mom. And he's so sad. And he disappointed his sister.
If you think about it, too, Violet is the only one in the room between Anthony, Violet, and even Daphne. Even though she's not in the room, that has been through the whole marriage mart. So, and it makes sense. Like, she knows how Daphne feels. And, like, all she was trying to do was tell Anthony, like, trust me.
Yeah.
Just a little. You can help. I need you to help.
Yeah.
But, like, you have to do what he hasn't been doing. Listening.
And paying attention. That's what she was kind of trying to tell him. Like, you know of your duty. She wasn't telling him to marry her off to the first guy. Just pay attention and care. That's all that she wanted, right? Like, show that you care. And be present, you know? And, but yeah, he took that and went way left field. way. So, and she's like, I'm making this for Daphne. She's embroidering tulips. And that's a huge Easter egg for multiple reasons. The first one is Simon, in the books, these expensive flowers that was brought up multiple times in this episode were actually tulips from Holland. And she's like, tulips symbolize passion. And perhaps your bride would like the same.
Yeah, I love that.
And in Anthony's book, he gives his future bride tulip. And if you can categorize Anthony and his future wife's relationship, passion.
Yes. So I love that.
Yeah.
Well, Violet's teasing him, one, and then two, like, but this is actually what I want for you, for all my kids.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, of course.
Find love.
And also, she knows that's exactly how to get rid of her kids, to start talking about marriage.
Yeah.
So he's like, bye. And
gotta go.
And the camera pans up towards the portrait of Violet, Edmund, and Anthony. And I just was like, wow. And then we go into Marina. She's writing. The Featherington housekeeper comes in and she's like, am I going to be confined to this room the whole time? Is your mistress going to keep me in here? And she's like, you have oneself to blame for your confinement. I was like, wow. The double entendre in that. I was like, you witty woman. Holy cow. Then it goes back to Daphne getting ready, and Eloise is like, whoo, dodged a bullet there with Nigel, you know, and And then we kind of discover a little bit that Eloise is afraid. She remembers her mom almost dying right after her father passed away. In the books, Eloise is the one walking with him when he passes away. Her fear is so intense, and it kind of lets you know why she's acting the way that she's acting, right? So she was like, I remember it, like you saying to me to drown out mom's screams, you know, or and her yelling. And it just shows that, like, you know, how close they were, and during those times, like, they just really had each other. I can't even imagine just losing my dad, and months later you think your mom's gonna die too,
especially being the one that witnessed one of them, right? Yeah.
And then you're gonna be there for another one, you know. Yeah. So that kind of gives you a little bit of backstory of how Eloise is kind of feeling, you know, and why she's so opposed to this, to the marriage mart. And then Daphne, you know, with her PC answers that she always gives, and then Eloise calling her out on her bullshit. She's like, it must be taxing. And Daphne's like, huh? She's like, the game of pretend that you feel you must endlessly maintain. And that also has such a double entendre. Yes. That Eloise had no idea about. Yes. And Daphne is left there just shook. She's just kind of like staring off into space, like,
like, she knows. Or, yeah, you know, yeah, like, it could be anything, but... Yeah. That was good.
That was so good.
And you see the difference. I love that you see in this scene, you see the difference between Eloise and Daphne and what they want for themselves.
Yeah.
And how they actually look at the world too.
Yeah. And something I forgot to mention earlier is Lady Danbury had called Simon out for not wearing color. And the very next scene, he's wearing color. And the very next ball, which is what we're about to jump into, he's wearing red. So he makes a smart remark, but he actually listens.
Same colors that she uses too, yeah, right?
Yeah. And that just shows how much he respects her and everything that she says, right? And it also goes to show that he really listened to her when he was younger, and he was like, you know, and he still is very kind and deserving of the attention that he's receiving. Yeah.
Yes.
I love that.
And they're very similar. They joke, and they're terrifying in like a very like fun way. Yeah. I love it so much.
It's so good. And then we hear In My Blood by Shawn Mendes playing by cover of by Vitamin C String Quartet. We see falling petals, Simon slow motion escorting Daphne onto the dance floor. She's just like, it's such a beautiful scene. And I love the choice of song because they are both in each other's blood. They are, yeah, both in each other's veins and under each other's skin. And, you know, she was like, you shouldn't have beat the curd out of Burbrook. And he's like, one thing I will not tolerate is a bully.
Yes. Yes.
I love that.
Lady Danbury, like, taught me better than, yeah, that, right? You can, sure, be terrifying as long as you're not a bully.
Yeah. Yeah. And the whole call me Simon, and, you know, if we're truly going to pretend, then Daphne was just like, I'm serious now. Like, you know, this is my life. I need to find a husband. Yeah. You know, this isn't about impressing Lady Whistledown anymore. This is about my future. I want to have children. I want to find a husband. I want to fall in love. And he's like,
basically, I have to do what I have to do, yeah, to get what I want.
Yeah.
And I need you to be on board. Yeah. Or
he's
else.
Like, he's like, okay, I'm on board. I'm, yeah, here to help you. The way that they're like looking at each other's lips at that point. Oh my, yeah, God. He's just.
And the skin on skin action.
Yes. Oh my Lord. Guys, this was Regency flirting right here. Staring at each other's lips, you know? And they're just so close to each other, and it's so intense, you know? And
touching the back, yeah, with your bare hand.
Her back. And then they kind of part ways. Someone asks Daphne to dance, and they keep just looking back at each other. He just does not stop looking at her at all. And Lady Danbury says, the two of you are like captivating to watch. And he is just grinding his jaw. He's just flustered. And Lady Danbury is like, whatever is bothering you? And he stutters.
I love that.
Nothing
at all, Lady Danbury.
And he puts on his facade of a smile, his little half smirk that he does. And how apt is it that he's wearing red and you can see him falling in love for her already? Yeah. It's all over his face and hers too. She's dancing with this guy and she keeps looking over at him, yeah. You know?
And his stutter, like it's in the book, he works so hard to try and get rid of it. But when he's overcome with emotion,
yeah,
then it comes out.
Yeah.
Like we just saw.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know.
He doesn't know what to do. Yeah. And then the longing on his face, and then we get the final flashback, and it was not so long ago, and it's the vow that he made to his father. This is the only vow that I will make. I will never marry. I will never sire an heir. The line ends with me. And then he's like, speak. He's like, speak, you fucking monster. And I was like,
whoa.
Me and when we watched it together, we were shook. We were like, what just freaking happened?
Same reaction when I watch it all the time.
Same. It's I'm like crazy. Gonna cry right now. And then that's what is bothering him. He just made this vow to his father that he's never gonna have children, and he's falling in love with this woman who all she wants is children. All she wants is love and marriage and kids. And he literally just over a month ago made a vow.
And this is the thing too, right? Like vows and being honorable, they go hand in hand. That's why there's so much going back and forth, yeah. And him trying to figure it out in the whole series, because some people I've heard like it's taking too long, you know, but you have to understand, like, he made this vow. He's a gentleman.
Your word is your bond.
Yes,
it's everything. So, your word is your honor. And he made that he probably made that vow to himself when he was 11. Yeah. And then he finally said it out loud to his father. And here he is falling in love with this woman who all she wants is the literal opposite of what his parents had. She wants love. She wants children. And he wants to give it to her. But he made this vow. Yeah. And I love that it shows his vulnerability, that he's fucked up, he made a mistake, you know, and
yes,
and he doesn't know what to do with himself, to where he's in public and a simple question is being asked and he cannot formulate words.
Love it.
So good.
Ended so so well.
Oh my god, amazing episode. Sorry guys, it's been 16 hours and we thought this would be a shorter episode, obviously not. But what else did you guys notice? Did you see any other Easter eggs? We're going to try to post a video of just the top 5 Easter eggs that we noticed in this episode. Let us know. Let us know if we missed anything. Thank you for your emails. Thank you for being like, oh, I didn't realize this. Or like, bitch, what the fuck is a step back? You know, like, thank you guys. We are in our own worlds right now. We are living in Bridgerton. We're in 1813 right now. So we're just saying things. So if you guys want any clarification, thank you for all the emails, thank you for all the DMs. Today someone was like, can you give me a timeline of this, and I just like sprouted out on the top of my I just knew it, which is really scary. So yeah, anything you guys want answers to that we can answer, might be wrong, but we'll answer them.
We'll let you know if we might be wrong, actually. But yes, we will answer them.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you guys so much. If you're not following us, please follow us on Bridgerton2000 on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. If you would like to email us, I love having email conversations with you guys. I love hearing your theories, everything like that. Bridgerton2000@gmail.com. And we do have a completely hella spoilery episode coming out with plot twists very soon, within the next couple weeks, on our Lit Wallflowers podcast. If you have already read the entire series, we do have some theories that are pretty wild, but we're kind of hoping it comes true. But that is extremely spoilery, so we are going to post it on our other podcast. We love you guys. Thank you guys for everything. Thanks for hanging in there. If you haven't already blacked out at this point, we appreciate you. Once again, there's so many podcasts, and you chose to sit through 17 hours of Bridgerton madness with us. We love you guys. Thanks for all your love on social media. Thanks for following. Thanks for listening. We can't wait to get into the next episode, because we get the Regency bend and snap. We get a prince. We get jealousy. We get the spoon. Oh, my goodness. I cannot wait to dive into next week's episode. We love you guys.
Yes. So be right back with more Buzzy updates.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.